The reading is taken from Exodus chapter 19, verses 1 to 8, and then chapter 20, verses 1 to 11. At Mount Sinai. In the third month after the Israelites left Egypt, on the very day, they came to the desert of Sinai. After they set out from Rephidim, they entered the desert of Sinai, and Israel camped there in the desert in front of the mountain. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, "This is what you are to say to the house of Jacob, and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites." So Moses went back and summoned the elders of the people and set before them all the words the Lord had commanded him to speak. The people all responded together, "We will do everything the Lord has said." So Moses brought their answer back to the Lord. The Ten Commandments. And God spoke all these words, "I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above, or on the earth beneath, or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy."
So one thing about this passage today, we've been working our way through Exodus. Hopefully you enjoy the journey. I know I have. So hopefully we've learned different things. God has spoken to us in different ways, but it's an amazing story. A very simple story in so many ways, and yet with great simplicity, there's great truth, but also great depths in all of those things. So we've been following the life of Moses from his birth until this point. It's been an amazing journey for him. And he finds himself back at the Sinai district of that mountain, and a place where he had spent many, many years, 40 years, looking after a flock of sheep. And do you remember that wonderful encounter at Sinai where he encountered the burning bush, and God spoke to him out of the burning bush, just him and a bunch of sheep. And here he is, 41 years later, maybe. Not that at the time. He's in the desert 40 years, but maybe about a year and a half or something after that. He finds himself back at this spot, but not with a flock of sheep, but with 2 million people. A big flock of people, his sheep, he is the shepherd of these people, but he finds himself the place that he's very familiar with, a people that were once enslaved in Egypt, but now have been set free. Freedom can be a very scary thing, can't it? To be released from what you've always known, what you've only known. They were slaves, and now they're free. What do they do with that freedom? There are many people in the world, even today, who are enslaved in different ways. And although they have the opportunity to get out of that bondage, out of that situation, they choose not to because they don't know what freedom would look like. This is what they're used to, so there are many people just prefer to stay because the alternative is to scary. Freedom can be very scary, and it was for those Israelites. It was brand new. And as you read the story, so often they kept saying, "I wish we'd never left Egypt. Can we go back to Egypt? It wasn't so bad." But it was bad. Our memories are very short. But they wanted to go back. But the freedom that God was taking them into was a freedom to flourish, a freedom to grow. This was something good, not something to be frightened of. It wasn't a kind of wild, reckless freedom where you're allowed to do whatever you like, a freedom that can damage yourself or damage those around you. No, this was a freedom to flourish. But freedom requires shaping. And these words that they're about to receive, the commandments, are going to shape their lives. From the moment we're born, we begin to have our lives shaped. Children have their lives shaped. There are so many laws you have to teach them. So many things you have to shape them by. There's the law of speaking and interrupting. There's the law of crossing the road. Just can't run. Gotta look. Gotta listen. There's the law of the dinner table. Don't eat with your mouth open. Keep your elbows off the table. There's so many laws, and we hope that that our boys and girls will take these laws into themselves. They will internalize them. They will make them their own. And if they do, hopefully they'll become an okay human being to live in the world, to get on with people, and to flourish. So we're constantly being shaped by laws, and that's exactly what's happening to Israel. These are children, 2 million children, the children of Israel, and they have so much to learn, and God has got so much to teach them. But the first thing that they learned is that they're totally dependent on Him. He called them. He has made them a nation. He brought them out of slavery. He is going to take them to the promised land. They're completely and utterly dependent on Him. Without Him, they're nothing. They're no one. But with Him, wow. And so here they are at Sinai. And the marriage ceremony is about to take place. That's what's happening. They're going to make promises. God's going to make promises. They're going to make promises. A binding contract is going to be drawn up on these two tablets of stone written by God's own finger. Just like any marriage, you sign. Those two tablets probably aren't five laws on one and five laws on the other. They're probably a copy for Israel and a copy for God. It's a legally binding contract. It is a marriage that they're entering into. They're going to make these promises. Now, some commentators say that the Ten Commandments mean nothing to us today. Somehow Jesus has done away with those things. But that's not the way Jesus saw it. In Matthew chapter 5, he says, "Don't think that I've come to abolish the law. I've come to fulfill it." And then once Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment? And you know what Jesus said? He said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. And the second one is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." But isn't that these commandments? Loving God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. Isn't that commandment 1, 2, 3, and 4? And isn't loving your neighbor as yourself, isn't that commandments 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10? Seems to me Jesus was pointing at these very commandments. So they're very relevant to all of us today. So God descends on the mountain. There's smoke. There's trumpets being played. It's very, very noisy. It is a marriage ceremony never to be forgotten. And who forgets their wedding day anyway? It is a day to remember. This was something spectacular. But there's something we need to remember about this law giving. This law is given to people who are already redeemed. These are people of faith. These are people who have heard God speak and obey it. These are people who have been released from judgment when the angel of death passed over and saw the blood on the doorpost. They were saved in that judgment. These are people who have been set free from slavery and given a life of freedom. And so the law was never meant to be a tick list. It's never God saying, if you do this and do this and don't do that and don't do that, you keep all these things and maybe let you into heaven. It was never meant to be a ladder ascending into heaven. No, these are laws that shape the lives of those people who are already redeemed, who are already set free from slavery, who are already His. He didn't give the commandments saying, you better keep these if you want to become my people. He said, these are the commands that you will live by because you are my people. So do you see the difference? It wasn't about keeping a law in order to gain God's approval. It was adopting this life because they were God's people. This was an appropriate way to live. Jesus said in the New Testament, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. And so we do what Jesus asked us to do, not to gain his approval, not so we become Christians, but we keep those commands because we are his already. That is the appropriate thing to do. We keep the commandments, but we're not saved by them. We are saved just like everyone through the Bible has been saved, from Abraham, saved by grace through faith. Not by keeping a law, but saved by grace through faith. And so, in keeping the commandments, it is a sign that we love him. But these commandments represent who God is. They embody his nature, and if we are his people, we want to be like him. That's the goal of any Christian, to become more and more like Jesus every day. And so when God says, don't commit adultery, why does he say that? It's because he is a God who is faithful. And when he says, don't steal, it's because he is a God who gives. And when he says, don't lie, it's because he's a God who is truth. So these commandments reflect his nature. And we want to be like him. He is our role model in all of this. And so we're going to look at these first four commandments very briefly. We're going to think about the next ones next week. But these first four says this, and God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. We know that. They knew that. But this was the context of everything. I am the Lord, your God, who brought you out of the land of slavery, and you shall have no other gods before me. God is God. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He is it. You can't put anyone before him, in front of him, or anywhere around him, because he is God. He will not let anyone else take that position. It is like a marriage. There can be only one husband in a marriage. You can't have anybody else. It just doesn't work that way. There'll be only one wife in a marriage. There's no room for any other. And if we are his, he demands our sole allegiance. If we are his, he demands our sole allegiance. Is that reasonable? Well, of course it is. On the day I got married to the love of my life, and I said to Dawn, everything I am, I give you, and everything I have is yours. And she said, yippee! But that was my commitment to her. Everything. I hold nothing back. There can be no one else. I can't give this to anyone else. It seems like the reasonable thing to do. And so for God to say, you won't have anyone else but me. I'm your husband in this marriage arrangement. It's not demanding. It's reasonable. And whenever we put that into practice, this is our worship. Isaiah says this. God says this in Isaiah. I am the Lord. That is my name. I will not give my glory to another. And so because God is mighty, the second commandment says this, you shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven or heaven above or the earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. They had left Egypt. But this journey wasn't simply about Israel leaving Egypt. It was about getting Egypt out of Israel. And old habits die hard. But a new path of freedom was there. The idol worship that they knew in the past was no longer acceptable. It was time to leave it behind. This was a new relationship. We love tangible things, don't we? We love to see things. But the Israelites had moved on. The days of a God being made out of stone or wood were over. And even an attempt to make God or represent God by a piece of wood or anything was limiting God, because God is God. He's too complex, he's too sophisticated, he's too big, he's too godlike. So you can't make him into a thing. Even when Jesus spoke to the woman at the well and they had a great conversation, and she said, "Well, we worship on this mountain, but you worship in Jerusalem." And Jesus said, "You just don't get it. God isn't in a place. God can't be contained in a building or a mountain. God is spirit and must be worshipped in spirit and truth." The Israelites were going to have to get their heads around this, because it was a whole different ball game. But they weren't allowed to make an image of anything. But then that line, "He is a jealous God." Is jealousy a bad thing? We think of it as a bad thing, don't we? Some translation put "zealous," which is another good way of putting it. I'm a zealous God. But actually, I think jealousy is a good word, because jealousy is not inappropriate. Again, if someone were to come to Dawn and say, "I've seen Gary hanging out with another woman quite a lot recently. I saw them here, I saw them there." She'd think, "What's going on?" Would jealousy be an appropriate response? Yeah, it would be, because you've said all I am is yours and all I have is yours. So what's going on here? Yeah, God is a jealous God. He wants us for himself. He doesn't want to share us with another. Certainly not a piece of wood or a piece of metal. So for the Israelites, it was time to move on. And for us also, if we follow Jesus, it's time to move on. A God can't be wrapped up in a bank account or some kind of selfish ambition. This should not be what we worship anymore. No, we worship a new God. We have a new freedom. We've got a new destination. Everything is new. We have to leave those old ways, the ways of the world, behind. Nothing wrong with bank accounts and things like that. But if we worship them, if we bow down to them, if we spend a lot of time on them, more than the one true God, our husband in this relationship, something's not going to work out very well. Time to move on. We belong to him. And then the third commandment, "You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name." A name back then wasn't simply a label because you liked the sound of it. It really meant something. Even the angel said to Mary, "You will call his name Jesus because he will save his people." And Jesus said to Peter, "Well, you're Andrew, but I'm going to call you Peter. You're going to be a rock in this mission, in this church." Names meant something. So the name of God, the Lord, Yahweh, talked about his character and his being, talked about his very personhood. And so to idly use his name, or to use his name as a swear word, is just gross. Why would we do that? So his name is important. There is no other name under heaven by which we must be saved than the name of Jesus, who will be given the name that is above all names, the name of Lord, our Lord. A name is so important. And then just finally, the fourth one of today. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, your male or female servant, your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and made it holy. Whenever we take time out to worship God, there's something special about that. The Sabbath was a time to be different, to remember God, who had brought these people out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery, who had given them freedom, who had given them everything. They were totally dependent on him. a time to stop and remember that and to give thanks. And that's what we do. We remember this creation, this beautiful sunshine is His. All of creation is His. The life that we have, the breath in our body is His. A time to stop and say, Lord, I'm sorry that I forget so easily, but You are amazing. This world that You've made is just awesome. Thank You that You love me in such an amazing way. Thank You for dying on a cross for me. Thank You for an eternal life that You've given to me. Thank You. Thank You. A time to be refreshed. A time to remember, and that's what we're going to do today as we have communion in just a few moments' time. To remember God's goodness to us. To remember that He's rescued us. To remember that He's given us freedom. To remember. So these first four commandments set the whole lot in context. The ones we're going to look at next week set it all in context. God is our God. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. Only then can we truly obey the other commandments, because without Him, we can't do any of these things. This wasn't the first time that people had received the law. When had they received the law before? Can you think of a time? Matthew Henry, one of the old commentators, says this: the law that God had given to man, He had given to man before. It was written in His nature. But sin had so defaced that writing that it was necessary in this manner to revive the knowledge of it. So he's saying that Adam and Eve didn't need tablets of stone. It was written on their hearts. It was ingrained in them. It was who they were. They loved the Lord their God with everything they were. They had no selfish ambition. They loved their neighbor. They loved others. They were perfect. It was written in their hearts. But sin came along, and like getting a virus into your computer, messed everything up, corrupted everything. So our thinking, our actions, everything corrupted. And so God is retraining them, sending them back to a default position, giving them the law one more time, showing them who He was and who they could be like. This is a life. This is a standard, because you are God's children. And so we are. The wonderful image is that we have the laws written on our hearts. Jesus has kept the law and given us His Spirit. So hopefully, as we conclude Exodus next week by finishing the commands, we will see ourselves in this story, shaped by His commands. Loving, beautiful commands that will shape everything we do, every choice we make, every way we spend our money, every place we go. That's not a bad thing. That's a freeing thing.